Taking your relationship to the next level. This is Passion with Dr. Lori. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
Welcome to Passion, a show all about love, sex, and relationships. My name is Paris Mansouri. I'm sitting in for Dr. Lori this week. She is going to be back next week. I'm sure you're all excited to have her back, but I hope you'll enjoy my company as I sit in her chair and keep it warm. I never use the word fill-in when it comes to Dr. Lori because I'm not a doctor. I'm a broadcaster, and I have the privilege of keeping you company while she's away. And tonight on the program, we focus on teen sexuality and sex education. We're going to talk about bullying and gender-based violence. And seeing as I'm not a doctor or an expert in this area, I have in studio with me someone who is. Dr. Ada Senecor is chair of the Gender, Sexuality, Feminist, and Social Justice Studies program in the Institute for Gender, Sexuality, and Feminist Studies at McGill University. She is also the director of the Social Justice and Diversity Research Lab at McGill, an associate professor in the counseling psychology program at McGill University as well. Dr. Senecor has over 20 years of experience working in the U.S., Canada, and internationally recognized for her expertise. She's received a lot of honors and awards for her work and is actively involved in research addressing topics like gender equity, education, gender-based violence, and bullying. And most recently, she's invited to continue her work on gender equity education and anti-bullying initiatives in collaboration with several Taiwanese universities. You can connect with her at mcgill.ca/social justice, or you can give her a call at 514-398-3446. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. In speaking with Dr. Senecor before the show, I felt like a sponge. We talk about bullying. It's such a hot topic being spoken about all the time, you know, between bullying and now cyberbullying, gender-based violence. These are topics like du jour. It's topics that we see all the time that take on different shapes and forms. And we discuss them on air as just topics. But what I loved with you in preparing the show is your insight gave me a completely new perspective. And anyone who's tuning in right now, I really, really, highly suggest you stay with us during this whole hour, because we're going to be talking about everything from teenagers to how we speak to children to basically how we conduct ourselves, not only with each other, but also with those who are younger than us and how that shapes and frames them. And it doesn't matter if we're their parents. Anyone we're involved with socially, we affect, and especially kids. And Dr. Senecor is going to give us insight on that. You can join in our conversation by texting or calling at any point during the show. The number is 1-800-491-2523, or you can text in at 514-800 or 71010. And look at that, Dr. Senecor, we have a text. And the first text of the night is, feminism is cancer.
Wow.
So that's how we're starting off the night.
Okay.
Okay. So without addressing that, because a lot of people believe that feminism and that word takes on a whole men bashing, male bashing, negative belief system, I would love to know about essentially femininity and masculinity broken down.
Okay, so
we're starting very general.
Very general.
And then we're going to really focus in on how we essentially have shaped teen behavior, child behavior, and basically the effect that has had on bullying and basically gender identity.
Okay, so I want to start by kind of saying that we have this thing called gender, right? And people oftentimes confuse gender with biological sex. So when I'm talking about gender, I'm not talking about biological sex. I'm talking about how people perform, their mannerisms. And typically when we talk about people's mannerisms, we link them to feminine mannerisms, feminine way of dressing, feminine ideas, and masculine mannerisms, masculine way of dressing, masculine ideas. And these things are kind of socially constructed. So they're about performance. So if I use the word gender, I'm talking about performance.
Okay. Now, when we're talking about basically gender creation, not gender creation in terms of biology, but when we're talking about socialization and the creation of that identity for young boys, for young girls, and then onto their teenage years, How is that developed? I mean, you know, we think blue for boys, pink for girls, and then we have dolls for girls, action figures for boys. Mm-hmm. That is the basis on which everything seems, it just seems like that's the foundation that we start off with children.
Right. So, I mean, we kind of live in a society that has these kind of binaries that say girls are going to act a certain way, they're going to wear dresses, they're going to be petite. Oftentimes we give girls less space to play in than boys. We give boys a lot more room to run around. Boys are going to be strong and they're going to be aggressive. And the expectation is they're going to be rough and tumble. And they're a real boy if they're rough and tumble. And we kind of give them feedback that that's what we expect of them.
Right. And with girls, it's delicate, mm-hmm. quiet. And what I loved in our conversation before the show is that you mentioned that we teach girls that the world is a dangerous place, yeah. and that they have to be careful. Whereas guys, young boys and teenagers don't get that same message. Mm-hmm. They're taught to defend themselves and be aggressive.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about why that is and how that happens?
Well, I mean, I think we live in a society where women and young girl, I mean, we have women are raised with this kind of fundamental fear of being sexually assaulted. And I think that or sexually harassed, and we can see in the statistics that fear is not unfounded. And so I think we raise girls to kind of be very aware of their environment. And then as they get older, we raise them to stay safe, right?
Okay.
So we teach them to go to the bathroom in pairs. We teach them not to walk home alone at night, make sure they have a ride home. Like, we give them all kinds of all kinds of ways in which they can take care of themselves to stay safe. And the implicit message is that is to not be sexually assaulted.
Right.
Where with boys, we still want boys to be safe, right? So we tell them to text us when they get there and tell them to text us when they get home. But we're not as worried about boys being violated in the way we're worried about girls being violated. In fact, we kind of raise them that they're independent and they're strong and they can take care of themselves and they're going to be able to manage in a difficult situation.
Okay. And is that, knowing how society is, and you have mentioned the numbers show that there is an area of concern for women, is that such a wrong way to teach a girl, like, this is going to happen, you need to be careful, not this is going to happen, but this may happen, so we need to prepare our daughter differently than we prepare our son?
I mean, I think we have to be honest about what's happening in our society with regard to the incidences of sexual assault, etc. But I think we have to start really thinking about why is it happening? Like, why have we tolerated this kind of violence against women for so long? And so it's not that I think we shouldn't be making sure girls understand that they need to stay safe, but I think we should be really talking about what can we do to change the fact that we need to raise girls to stay safe.
Okay, and that is the point that we are going to pick up off of and continue right after this. That was Dr. Ada Senecor. She is an expert on this topic. We are talking about bullying and gender-based violence. We just started off the show speaking about essentially gender identity and the basics of it. The conversation could be so long and we can go on for hours on it, but we're going to make sure to touch on several different topics specifically. So I'm going to make sure to get to the bullying, the cyberbullying, and essentially deconstruct some of it so we understand it better, since we're talking about it quite frequently these days. You're listening to Passion. We're on weeknights from 10 to 11, talking about love, sex, and relationships. Tonight, it's Teen Talk, and we have Dr. Ada Senecor, who's in with us the whole hour. You can join in our conversation by texting or calling in with your questions, 1-800-491-2523, or you can text in at 514-800 or 71010. You're listening to Passion.
She can help improve your love life in a few different ways. Passion with Dr. Lori. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Paris. I'm sitting in for Dr. Lori all week this week. She's back next week. It's my pleasure to keep you company. Tonight, we're focusing on teen sexuality and sex education. We're going to be talking about bullying and gender-based violence with Dr. Ada Sinacor. She is the chair of Gender, Sexuality, Feminist, and Social Justice Studies program in the Institute for Gender, Sexuality, and Feminist Studies at McGill University. And it seems like it's a hot topic. And a lot of people from the text, I'm getting the sense that they heard us speak about feminism and they heard you talk about how girls are raised to fear, whereas boys are raised to be aggressive, and they're going off. I'm going to read a few of the texts and I'm going to give you the chance to kind of go back on the point that you were trying to make so we can clarify. Our goal with this show is to enlighten and give a different perspective. And at no point, I can assure you, does Dr. Sinacor believe that girls should be raised this way or boys should be raised that way. That is actually not at all the point of this program. And I hope you'll stick around with us so we can further get into it. We have a texter who says, excuse me, I'm a male and I was taught to be careful of strangers. This has nothing to do with genders. And someone else says, feminism is cancer. Texter is right on. What hypocrites. Feminists are the ones convincing girls they are unsafe. Boys are just as vulnerable. And Dr. Sinacor, I wanted to give you the opportunity to speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that boys aren't vulnerable. I think boys are very vulnerable. And I think we're raising all of our children to be, I think this fear of the stranger has become a big part of our society. But I do think that we can't discount that there is this thing called gender-based violence that both men and women experience, but that in reality, the predominant perpetrators of gender-based violence are men, even if the victims are men. And so we need to try to understand what's happening in terms of why is it okay for, like, why do we accept that this phenomena of violence based on gender is kind of a part of our society, right? If we did a study in my lab on men's experiences of gender-based violence, we put posters up and we asked, well, have you been teased or bullied for not being masculine enough? And the responses on the posters were, you faggot, join a fight club. So we got these responses that people didn't even like the fact that we were asking men this question. And then when we did the research, the men in the study talked about the fact that the violence they experienced was from other men. And so we're trying to understand how we can do things differently to understand why we're so connected to these gender binaries so that people don't feel more comfortable and we don't feel threatened when people don't fit into those categories.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we were speaking about off air is the bullying of men.
Right.
And the concept of masculinity and how so much of it is put on men, this perspective of being quote unquote manly, that's kind of an institutionalized almost concept of masculinity that mm-hmm. is put on young boys. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? I mean, we can't say, again, I want to clarify, we're not saying that the whole world believes this, and we're not generalizing and saying it's the entire population and all parents do this. We're just speaking generally according to a social construct that mm-hmm. that, you know, we're aware of within our society.
Well, look, I mean, we have huge problems on university campuses, right, with regards to the issue of frats and sports and hazing. So the question becomes, how do we get to a place where we get to university and we have this phenomena of hazing in sports teams and the fraternity phenomena? And why is it that gets accepted somehow, like that's expected to be the norm of what's happening on university campuses? And honestly, the people who are doing this research, while feminists started doing a lot of this research years ago, the people who are doing this research on men and masculinity are predominantly men who are concerned about men's violence against women and men's violence against other men. So let's contextualize it's that the feminists who are doing this work are men.
Interesting.
Right? So, and I don't know that they call themselves feminists, but if you're saying feminism is cancer, those, the people who are talking about gender-based violence in men and the people who are talking about men's experience of being raised so they get to the university when they get their independence, they kind of have this, what they call this 18 to 25 year old period where somehow the level of violence go up. These are men doing this work very concerned about the price that men are paying for this, for rigid definitions of masculinity.
It's interesting. We just had a texter write into us, and they're saying all these studies are leaving one important aspect, and that's the spiritual issue. Human behavior cannot change unless the heart is changed. I love that. And we all, and that is not, the heart isn't gender based. I think spirituality right. is spirituality. Thank you so much for that. It's a nice little yeah. reminder, and it brings us back. I wanted to speak with to you with regards to the institutional construct, essentially, mm-hmm. of men. And we were talking off air with regards to, let's say, a young boy who has interests in more arts oriented activities. And sometimes individuals who are young boys or elementary school age boys who are, let's say, interested in ballet or something artistic are sometimes bullied mm-hmm. because it's not considered, quote unquote, manly.
Right. So the way we've kind of constructed masculinity in our society, right, is that, I mean, Dr. Michael Kimmel talks about this quite a bit and has done extensive research on this. So we kind of constructed that it's not just not feminine, it's almost anti-feminine. So there's this whole idea of no sissy stuff, right? So you don't want to be feminine and you don't want to be gay because those two things kind of are get connected in terms of this idea of stereotypical masculinity. So men are supposed to be strong, they're not supposed to cry, they're supposed to have interests in things that are athletic and physical. And that's not to say that that's true of all men, but there is kind of this pressure. And even when we look at how we fund arts programs in schools versus how athletic programs get funded, where we put money into athletics and art, you know, the emphasis for men and boys is oftentimes athletics versus fine arts or ballet. And then when boys are interested in those things, they're not oftentimes encouraged because they're not necessarily considered masculine enough.
What advice would you have for a parent who has a child who's interested in, and even on the flip side, let's say a girl isn't delicate or feminine, and you know, we're talking about young girls walking a tight line between being considered not girly enough or too girly.
So I think that, you know, there's a lot more permission for girls to have masculinity in terms of as growing up, then there is permission for boys to have feminine traits.
Okay.
Except for, I think what happens for girls, when girls get into high school, or you know, then the pressure to not be so masculine, to not be tomboyish, to be more feminine comes on. So like the research we've done shows that if a girl is too feminine, she's slut shamed and people called names, or if she's too masculine, then she's a butch or she's a lesbian. So she kind of has to walk this tightrope to be the perfect level of femininity, which restricts their behavior. I think with boys, we see like this homophobic bullying. Oh, that's so gay, you homo. Boys who are effeminate are automatically assumed to be gay, even if they're straight. So there's kind of it kind of gets played out a little differently for what happens to young boy to adolescent boys and adolescent girls.
Absolutely. Another texter says some of the best nurses are men and some of the best doctors are women. I think we're
That's
agreed.
True.
Absolutely. We're totally agreed with that. We're talking with Dr. Ada Sinacor. She is the chair of the Gender, Sexuality, Feminist and Social Justice Studies program in the Institute for Gender, Sexuality and Feminist Studies at McGill University. She is here with us for the whole hour, and we're speaking about bullying and gender-based violence, which we are going to get to next. Before we get to that, I wanted to speak with you just on this topic with regards to a boy who is behaving perhaps a little too feminine or involved in activities that he's getting bullied for. And same for a young girl who is involved in activities, let's say she starts weightlifting at an early age and she's developing muscles and people are telling her she's starting to have a man's body. If you're a parent and you see that developing and you see the passion dying in your child because of the concerns they have about the feedback they're getting mm-hmm. socially, what would be your advice to that parent?
So I think parents have to be really thoughtful about what their beliefs are about masculinity and femininity. Do they believe what they believe is appropriate gender behavior for boys? So they don't make an assumption that this is about peer pressure or anything else, that they really need to be able to sit back and ask their son or daughter, okay, you've been very interested in this. If you're losing interest, what's going on for you? Is it about the fact that this is a masculine trait or people see you as feminine? Is it about their belief system that, well, I'm not a real man if I do ballet? Or is it really about the peer pressure, or is it a combination of both?
Just recognizing, before putting on our belief system, recognizing what may be going on in their own mind.
Right.
Dr. Ada Senecor is with us this whole hour speaking about bullying and gender-based violence. We're going to get deeper into it. We're going to be talking about this study that I was reading at about boys underperforming in school and getting Dr. Senecor's perspective on that. You're listening to Passion. We're on weeknights from 10 to 11 talking love, sex, and relationship. Tonight, as I mentioned, we focus on bullying and gender-based violence. You can join our conversation by texting or calling in with your questions or comments, 1-800-491-2523 or 514-800 or 71010. You're listening to Passion.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Whether you need to learn how to talk or something more hands-on, she can help. Passion with Dr. Lori. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
Welcome back to the show. As the gentleman just said, my name is Paris Mansouri. I'm sitting in for Dr. Lori this week. Tonight on the program, we focus on teen sexuality and sex education. We have Dr. Ada Senecor in studio with me tonight. It's been so pleasant so far. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm not a doctor or an expert in this area or expertise. So Dr. Senecor is here to guide us through. We're talking about bullying and gender-based violence. We've been talking about masculinity and drawn the ire of many people, it seems. Somebody just texted in saying, are we living in a more misogynist society? I wonder, I don't know if either of us are able to answer that. I don't know if there's been research.
More than when.
Exactly. That we had a texter earlier say some of the best nurses are men and some of the best doctors are women. And Dr. Senecor and I both said that we definitely agree with that.
Absolutely.
And at no point during this conversation are we comparing the sexes as one more superior to the other or agreeing with any of the methodology in which gender identity has been used to define the roles of men and women in society. Essentially, we're just shedding light and providing information behind the topic from an expert. Over 20 years of experience working in the U.S., Canada, and abroad, internationally recognized for your expertise. Dr. Senecor is the chair of the Gender, Sexuality, Feminist, and Social Justice Studies program in the Institute for Gender, Sexuality, and Feminist Studies at McGill University. And you've been most recently invited to continue your work on gender equity education and anti-bullying initiatives in collaboration with several Taiwanese universities. If you would like to connect with her, www.mcgill.ca/social justice, or you can call her at 514-398-3446. And if you want to join our conversation, 1-800-491-2523, or you can text in at 514-800 or 71010. I know you wanted to go back because you have worked with nurses.
Yes, I have. I mean, I want to talk about the fact that we're trying to kind of deconstruct some of this stuff, but the thing about the nurse comment is very interesting, and I'm really glad the person texted it. Because male nurses, who are very competent, of course, are oftentimes, when people see them in the hall, assume that they're either orderlies or doctors. And so, again, we have this idea that nurses are women, and so men who are nurses are oftentimes not, people mistake them for other roles. And so I think it's important for us to understand that that stereotype still exists.
Another texter says, "That's so gay" has been used as a non-homophobic noun for the last 10 plus years. It just means something bad. You know this. It's not really valid to your point.
I actually have to disagree with this comment. I'm a queer woman. And when I hear "that's so gay," even if it's supposed to mean that that's something bad, you're using the term "gay" as a way to say something's bad. And I don't think we should be accepting that. And as a queer woman, I can't accept that as a socially accepted way of describing something as bad.
I've always been uncomfortable with that term, actually. Or "that's so gay" or "no homo."
Right, exactly. I mean, it's kind of like, so it's a way to kind of let people know and to marginalize. And when you think about it with young kids don't always know these euphemisms. So if we're using euphemisms that are homophobic in nature or communicate that something that is gay is bad or related to something bad, we shouldn't be accepting that as socially okay, because the message underneath it is that gay is bad.
I don't think that's ever... when you're either of those terms, I don't think it's ever used in a positive manner. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I wanted to go back to a report that I came across and I wanted your take on it. It's a report based on the 2013 book called "The Rise of Women, The Growing Gender Gap in Education and What It Means for American Schools," the sociologists Thomas A. DePreet and Claudia Buckman observe. And I quote, "Boys' underperformance in school has more to do with society's norms about masculinity than with anatomy, hormones, or brain structure. In fact, boys involved in extracurricular cultural activities such as music, art, drama, and foreign languages report higher levels of school engagement and get better grades than other boys. But these cultural activities are often denigrated as unmasculine by pre-adolescent and adolescent boys." And they continue saying, "By the time young men do reach college, a deep-seated gender stereotype has taken root that feeds into the stories they have heard about themselves as learners. Better to earn your man card than to succeed like a girl, all in the name of constantly having to prove an identity to yourself and to others." Would you agree with that?
I mean, I'm not going to dispute the research. I do think that the arts provides with a lot of education that athletics don't, right? So I think athletics, we need to value athletics. But I think the reason why kids were involved, especially boys, were involved in these more arts kind of activities do better in school because they require critical thinking, they require a lot of social activity, they require the use of both, the use of like eye-hand coordination. Like, they actually require a whole lot of fine motor skill development and other things that would result in being more, and they also require a lot more attention, longer attention spans that result in them doing better academically.
Okay.
Right.
And, you know, since we've been saying the word masculinity so many times, yeah, theoretically speaking, you know, with regards to your knowledge, obviously, when I hear masculine, I think of, you know, strong guy.
Right.
But you obviously know the scientific studies with regards to this. Can you tell me about what, you know, the components of masculinity are?
So I want to kind of also deconstruct this a little bit. So masculinity is not necessarily linked to biological sex.
Okay.
Society says, like, we have this societal idea that men are masculine and women are feminine, and we can have masculine women, we can have feminine men, we can have androgynous people, or we can people who are fluid, who are on a continuum. But when we think about this kind of societal construction of masculinity, we think about the guy who is strong and non-emotional, who wears pants and a suit, or, you know, a certain way of dressing. I mean, we have the metrosexual stereotype, right? That kind of moves a little bit away from the very traditional masculinity, right?
Okay.
And then with femininity, we're looking about small hand movements or the way people dress, the way people sit, how they walk, how they behave, how they use their tone of voice. Men can have a big voice, women may have a softer voice, and how they use their body.
Okay.
Right?
And do you find that most recently, I don't have children myself, but I do see how my friends are raising their kids. And I find that there is a more openness mm-hmm. towards buying dolls. I have a friend of mine who has a boy and a girl. And if they get dolls, they can both get dolls mm-hmm. and they both play with the dolls. And I know another friend of mine painted her baby's room green because she didn't want the child to associate with either. Do you find that there is a movement?
I mean, I think there's a lot more openness than there has been in the past to allow people to have more fluid gender, kind of perform gender in more fluid ways, especially with young children. But I think as children get older, that kind of shifts as they move into pre-adolescent and adolescent. But let's look at the societal messages about masculinity and femininity, right?
Okay.
Walk down the street. What are the images of men you're seeing and what are the images of women you're seeing? So it's not just about like what's happening in the home. Why do we call them chick flicks? You know, like what are the movies kids are watching? What are the video games they're playing? These beliefs and these constructions of masculinity are so embedded in things we do every single day that we don't even notice that we're being bombarded with them.
We have a texter who says, so masculinity in males is bad, but masculinity in girls is good. Yeah, no hypocrisy there. I don't believe we ever said that in this conversation, not once. And somebody else from Toronto texting in saying, if you don't take any calls, will you balance this feminist theory out at some point with a men's perspective on all of the same issues? And I have to say, if we had somebody call in, I would have taken the call, I promise you. And the point of this conversation, again, to clarify, is not to give a feminist perspective, and it's not a feminist theory. Dr. Sinicor is here with me to speak about essentially bullying and gender-based violence, and all of that is rooted on the identity that we give to either sex as they're growing up, and we're talking about the creation of this identity and how it takes on different shapes and forms from the time a child is very small to when they get to university. And this takes on different forms. And that's what we've been discussing tonight. And again, I want to reiterate that at no point is either of the genders being blamed for any of the behavior. We're just commenting and reflecting on the facts and what Dr. Sinicor has come to realize in the last 20 years.
I mean, I don't think I don't think that masculinity is inherently bad or good. I think when we restrict anyone to a rigid gender expression, we are limiting their ability to explore all the different parts of themselves. And so I think by kind of letting go of some of these prescriptions and these restrictions, we allow for more growth, more innovation, and more kind of fluid development.
Left on the exact note I wanted to. You're listening to Passion. We're on weeknights from 10 to 11 talking love, sex, and relationships. You can join in our conversation by calling in 1-800-491-2523 or text in 514-800 or 71010.
You're listening to Passion with Dr. Lori. Sitting in tonight is Paris Mansouri.
We're in the final stretch. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking about bullying and gender-based violence and trying to basically break down the concept of masculinity and femininity and not say either is bad or either is good, but just generally explain how blanketing a man and saying you must be masculine isn't the healthiest thing for that individual because it limits them as to who they want to be. And the same thing, if we tell a girl you must be feminine, then we're limiting her in her ability. So Dr. Ada Sinicor, who has been with us the whole hour, has been essentially breaking down this essential creation of identity based on being a boy and being a girl and the tug of war that exists and essentially what we're doing to kids. So at no point has Dr. Sinicor, I want to reiterate, had said that masculinity is a bad thing or that men must not be masculine. Actually, what we've been talking about this whole hour is that the concept of masculinity and men being strong and you know, all the titles that we put on men isn't necessarily bad, but we have to kind of scale it back and realize that every man has their own identity that they want to fulfill. And if they want to be sensitive and cry and put their emotions out there and wear their quote unquote heart on their sleeves, that's okay. And that's what we've been discussing. And we hope that most of you or everyone has been partaking that regardless of what your opinion is. Maybe your opinion is that a man should be masculine and shouldn't express their opinions, not their opinions, but their feelings. And that's your truth. And that's fine. Dr. Sinacor, am I getting it right? Am I explaining our position properly?
Right. I guess what we're saying is we need to kind of get rid of this binary. You know, like, why do we even need this binary to allow people to explore all the parts of themselves, right?
We have an interesting text actually from a father. He says, as a father of a daughter and son, how am I supposed to teach them that both sexes are equal when there are so many obvious inequalities in this world? Thanks.
That's a great question. And if I was the wisest person in the world, I would be able to answer it. I think that the way you teach them that is through modeling for them how you're going to address the inequalities, right? And so kind of ensuring that there's as much equity between the way you're raising them, but equity has how you model things out there. And when you're watching things that, when you're watching movies and things like that, to have conversations with them about these kind of inequalities and these inequities and kind of make it explicit to be discussing with them what this looks like versus them just watching it and not really seeing what those messages are that they're getting based on those.
Absolutely. And understand that as much as you're, you know, a caring, thoughtful father who's aware that your behaviors are going to impact them, know that the moment that they're in school, from what Dr. Sinacor has been saying this past hour and what I understand from what your research says, is that that environment also affects them.
I mean, I think it's really important for parents to be willing to have conversations about who they are as a gendered person with their kids. We talk about like who we are as by our biological sex, but like the kinds of way we are kind of gendered in different ways in different contexts, right? Where sometimes in some contexts you may feel more masculine and others more feminine, and having those conversations with our kids as well, and like kind of saying, wow, like I really enjoy sitting here and doing this kind of activity because it makes me happy. So I'm sitting here and I'm drawing a picture with you and it makes me happy to do that because we get to be together and then the next activity, maybe it's something like I'm building something, I'm doing some carpentry with you and I'm enjoying that, not because it's the man thing to do, but because it's something I'm enjoying because we're doing it together. Like link the activity to the relationship beyond just it's what makes you a better man or a better woman.
Or this is what the boys do, so I'm doing. Okay.
But I do think we have to be honest with our kids when they're able to hear it about these inequalities so that they become, I mean, we all need to be advocates for equity, right? And so to become advocates for equity, we have to model it. And then we have to teach our kids how to be advocates for equity in an age-appropriate way.
We have another texter who wrote into us saying, why are traditional gender roles a bad thing? Again, at no point during this conversation was that ever said, but for some reason that was something you partook from this conversation. It says, women give birth and have biological changes to their body in order to care for that child. If that same theory is extended into other areas, example, hunter-gatherer, is your argument to remove those roles not in the face of biology? But again, Dr. Sinacor never advocated for removing roles.
Well, I think we have to be really careful what we're talking when we're calling something a traditional gender role. Traditional gender roles have evolved and changed so many times over the course of history. So when people were predominantly living on the farm, everybody was working on the farm. Women were working on the farm, men were working on the farm. When we had the industrial era, originally it was thought that women would be better in the factories because men were working on the farm. When computers first came out, people thought that they were going to be more for women and men. Like we've always had these kind of different ideas about what gender roles are. And as society changes, what traditional gender roles has changed. So when we're talking about traditional gender roles, we have to talk about what that means in the context of our own culture, in terms of our own family, and in terms of our own history, and then whether we embrace those or not in that context.
Another texter in at 71010 wrote to us saying, equality doesn't mean everyone is the same. It means everyone has the same opportunity.
So I think we have to deconstruct equality and start talking about equity, because I keep talking about equity, right?
Okay.
So equity is about everybody having the same, that things getting constructed in the way so that everybody has access, right? And so sometimes equity doesn't mean the same. So there's a very famous image where you have a short person, a medium height person, and a tall person, and they all need to see over the fence. So equality would be you gave them all the same bench,
footstool,
and only maybe the tall person could see over the fence. Equity means that you give them different heights of footstools so that they can all see over the fence. And I think we need to start talking about equity more than equality.
When it comes to the conversation with regards to gender roles, it is clearly a hot topic. I mean, just tonight, it seems like the more we talk about it, the moment that you hear the word feminism, like somebody just texted in saying, for once, I'd like a girly girl to talk about feminism. And it just seems like it hits both.
So where's the assumption that I'm not a girly girl come from?
But that's what I mean.
You have nobody sees me.
And the other end was that it's radical, you know, and it's anti-men.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting that this topic triggers so much emotion. And I believe the next question is, why? Why are we so attached to this concept of either women or men being attacked by virtue of the creation of the word, quote unquote, feminism?
Well, I mean, I think it's a great question. I mean,
and unfortunately, one that we don't get to talk about.
Oh, no. Next time.
Next time. But if you would like to connect with Dr. Sinacora, you can do so. You can visit her website, mcgill.ca/social justice. Her phone number is 514-398-3446. Thank you so much for being here tonight and for sharing your expertise. It's been very enlightening and I've been a sponge throughout it, and I appreciate the knowledge I gained. That's it for us tonight, guys. I want to thank all of you for tuning in, to everyone who texted in and joined in our conversation. Thank you so much, Mike Trutler and Dave Simon, for getting this show to air. You've been listening to Passion. You can stay in touch with me through Twitter and Instagram at Paris Mansouri. I'll speak to you again tomorrow night. Stay tuned for the comedy show with your funny man, Joey Elias. Have a great rest of the evening, and remember to fill your life with passion.